This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
Welcome to Lingua Franca on ABC Radio National. I'm Jill Kitson. This week, anyone who had a heart would know their own language. Another chance to hear virtuoso grammarian Jeff Pullum on the logic of standard English usage, as described in the Cambridge Grammar of the English Language. Jeff Pullum is Professor of Linguistics at the University of California at Santa Cruz. He and Professor Rodney Huddleston of the University of Queensland are the principal authors of the Cambridge Grammar of the English Language. Based on linguistic research carried out since the 1950s, it's the most comprehensive and reliable guide to the grammar of modern international standard English. Here's Jeff Pullum to demonstrate how their descriptive analysis of English grammar actually works.
When Rodney Huddleston and I had finally finished the manuscript of the Cambridge Grammar of the English Language, and at last it began to look like the publication would not be our first posthumous one, Cambridge University Press sent it out to some well-known scholars to see what they thought of it. One person who took a look was Gerald Gasdar, Professor of Computational Linguistics at the University of Sussex in England. And to our great pleasure and blushing pride, Gasdar wrote the following words. He said, "Every computational linguist who works on English needs to have this superb reference grammar lying open on their desk, and anyone who makes a living by teaching English language owes it to their pupils to keep a copy in the classroom." End quote. A very favorable verdict, and one that Cambridge University Press quoted on their website. But no good deed goes unpunished. Gasdar was promptly assailed as an ignorant lout, a man from the Oxford Modern Languages Library, whom I will call Blenkinsop, precisely because that is not his name, sent a short message to Cambridge University Press that said, "If Gerald Gasdar is a grammarian whose opinion we are supposed to respect, why does he write such ungrammatical English?" Now, I wonder if you noticed anything ungrammatical in what Gasdar wrote. I hadn't noticed it, but I went back to look again, and then I saw it immediately. Blenkinsop was objecting to phrases like, "Every computational linguist needs it on their desk." He thinks the word "everyone" is singular, so it can't be the antecedent of a third-person plural pronoun, like they or their. What Blenkinsop would prefer, I suspect, is to see the masculine singular. "Every computational linguist needs to have this superb reference grammar lying open on his desk." Older and more conservative users of the language often claim this is gender neutral, that it will be understood to include the feminine gender as well as the masculine. The trouble is that this is just an out-and-out lie. The Cambridge Grammar gently hints at that when it uses the phrase "purportedly sex-neutral he." If it were really true that he could be neutral with regard to the sex of the person referred to, you should be able to say, "Was it your father or your mother who hurt himself?" But that doesn't sound right. Himself and his and he are strictly reserved for cases with masculine antecedents, which would rule out referring to your mother. So people who pretend that "open on his desk" can mean "open on her desk, too," are just providing cover for widespread use of language that excludes women. It's about as subtle as not having women's toilets in the engineering building. Some people react against the discriminatory sexist past by trying to introduce a purportedly gender-neutral she, but of course that has the same sort of problems. It would really be silly to say, "No Australian Prime Minister enjoys her job." An Australian Prime Minister can't enjoy her job because she's always a he. So that leaves us with the cumbersome phrase, "he or she," which is what most modern editors try to force on the poor writer. But it leads into swamps of clumsiness, like, a journalist can't be so shy that he or she can't bring himself or herself to go up to a stranger he or she sees and ask him or her to give him or her his or her opinion. No one can bring himself or herself to go on like that, surely. There are actually cases where it's worse than that and not really possible at all to have he or she. One of them, which Rodney Huddleston just pointed out to me the other day, involves those tags like doesn't it and can't they that people put on the ends of sentences when they want a bit of confirmation. Those tags have to have a single pronoun, so you really can't say something like, no one should have to climb all those stairs at that age, should he or she? That sounds terrible. So there really is a crying need for that convenient so-called singular they. You want to say something like, no one should have to climb all those stairs at that age, should they? So, is it ungrammatical to say that, as Blenkinsop thinks? The answer is no. He thinks that because he's held in thrall by ancient but inaccurate dogma. He writes in about it because he's a self-anointed defender of the grammatical faith who lives to write grouchy letters to complain about violations. But he is wrong. The usage he's objecting to is thoroughly ingrained in English. Fine writers have been using it for hundreds of years. Jane Austen is particularly noted for using they with singular antecedents. So Miss Crawford in Mansfield Park says, everybody should marry as soon as they can do it to advantage. That's Jane Austen in 1814, and there are thousands of other examples down the years. A person can't help their birth. That's William Makepeace Thackeray in 1848. Nobody fancies for a moment that they are reading anything beyond the pale. That's Walter Bagehot in his book Literary Studies in 1877. At the end of the season, when everyone has practically said whatever they had to say, that's Lady Bracknell speaking in Oscar Wilde's play The Importance of Being Earnest in 1895, and Lady Bracknell never says anything ungrammatical. Who ever thought of sparing their grandmother worry? That's Edith Wharton writing in 1920, using singular they with who as the antecedent. Too hideous for anyone in their right mind to buy. That's W.H. Auden in 1955. And Blenkinsop in Oxford says it's all bad grammar? That Austen and Thackeray and Bagehot and Wilde and Wharton and Auden are incapable of writing their native language correctly? It's nonsense. These aren't peripheral figures. They are the epitome of what we mean when we talk about standard literary English. Blenkinsop is out of his crusty old mind. And he'll have a heart attack if he ever does look inside the Cambridge Grammar of the English Language, because it describes the language as it is and has been in this regard for hundreds of years. It recognizes they as completely okay with singular antecedents under the right circumstances. And it says what they are. A key thing that shows we're not dealing with an error here is that there are right circumstances and also wrong ones. There are some subtle grammatical restrictions on using they with a singular antecedent, restrictions that we unconsciously obey all the time. To explain, I need to draw a distinction between two uses of pronouns. In one use, they actually refer to people or things. As when you say, John applied for the directorship, but they didn't select him. You can even use them to point to people directly. You can gesture towards John and say, that's him. Call these referring pronouns because they actually refer to people. In the other use, pronouns don't really refer to anyone. They have antecedents like everyone or nobody or all or none or who or somebody or anyone, which don't themselves refer. Take an example like, no writers said they enjoyed writing. The pronoun they can't be referring to anyone here because the whole point of what the sentence says is that there weren't any writers who said they enjoyed writing, so there's no one to refer to. I won't get all technical here about how pronouns of this sort work like bound variables in logic, but I will borrow the term from logic. I'll call pronouns of this kind bound pronouns. The relevance of the distinction is this. In English, the pronoun they is fairly strictly limited to having a plural inflected antecedent when it is used as a referring pronoun, but there is no such restriction when it's a bound pronoun. To see that the first part of that is true, suppose you know someone called Chris was around earlier, and you have no idea whether it was a Christine or a Christopher, but Chris did leave a signed note saying, "I'll be back." You would never say, "Chris says they'll be back." Why not? Because this uses they as a referring pronoun, referring to Chris. And you can't use they as a singular referring pronoun in English, not even if you don't know Chris's gender. Here you'd be forced to say, "Chris says he or she will be back," even if it is clumsy. It's quite different with bound pronouns. We can certainly say, "Nobody left their pen behind." So their pen is fine. What I've just said is a bit simplified. In the Cambridge Grammar, we lay out the general idea, but we don't go into this as deeply as we could because it is a major topic. It was the subject of a beautiful doctoral dissertation by Rachel Laganoff at UCLA in 1997. She shows that universally quantified noun phrases like "everybody" are absolutely fine with they. Existential quantifiers like "someone" are nearly as good. Indefinite noun phrases like "a customer" are still thoroughly acceptable for a lot of people. So, for example, just 10 minutes ago in the radio studio where I am now, I heard a receptionist say on the phone to a DJ, "There's a caller with a musical question on line one. They realize they may have to wait." So that occurs. And that leaves only singular, definite noun phrases and names as sounding really odd with they, as I pointed out earlier when I said, "Chris says they'll be back." That really is ungrammatical. So it's a subtle system, but there is a system to it. Jane Austen and all the other writers who use they with antecedents like everyone aren't making mistakes. They're using a feature of English that some grammarians have incorrectly identified as an error. What the Cambridge Grammar tries to do is to describe English grammar in a way that adequately matches the facts of standard English usage, whether in novels, conversation, broadcast, speech, or tomorrow's newspaper. It treats the evidence of how people actually use the language as more relevant than the 100-year-old prejudices of curmudgeons and pedants like Blenkinsop. Some people are going to say we're relaxing standards of correctness because of that, but we're not. We've simply taken care to draw the line between the correct and the incorrect in the right place this time, because lots of earlier grammars didn't. And that left a lot of people feeling anxiously that they were never allowed to use they as a bound pronoun, even when they needed to. Copy editors still correct it to this day. I think it may even have affected song lyrics. It's always seemed to me that when Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote "Anyone Who Had a Heart," they intended it to be about anyone with a heart. The opening line of the chorus that gives the song its title should have said, "Anyone who had a heart would take me in their arms and love me too." But they bowed to the Blenkinsops and wrote, "Would take me in his arms," which ruins the song for any male singer who isn't gay, or for any woman singer who is. It's the victory of the Blenkinsops, the triumph of bad grammatical advice over poetry and love. What a waste. Don't let Blenkinsop or anyone else tell you how to use the pronouns of your own language in normal ways. Anyone who had a heart and knew their English would accept a bound singular they.
Jeff Pullum, co-author with Rodney Huddleston of the Cambridge Grammar of the English Language. And that's all for this week's Lingua Franca.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs, more than 260 transmitters Australia-wide. And we're live on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcast.